issue. In terms of reading the applications of the new nominees, Mr. Johnson defined the Citizen Review Committee as being there to provide citizen accountability to the Police Bureau's Internal Affairs Division, which is actually an interesting perception of what the CRC does, because they do oversee the Internal Affairs Division as opposed to what I think most citizens expect their review board to do, which is to bring accountability to the Bureau itself. And Ms. Jackson's application doesn't really use the word police or accountability. I guess she's from a mediation background, and I can see positive influence in the community for us having the mediation program now, but I'm not quite sure that it's necessarily a good way for the review board to be headed. And also, Ms. Jackson's question about whether she has any friends or family who are in public safety, her number one reference is Mary Force, who runs a mediation consultant firm that Ms. Jackson, I think, is affiliated with, and Ms. Force is a former Detroit police officer, so I'm not sure if that counts as a conflict or not. It's also, I think all of you are aware that Marcella Red Thunder was on the board, then she was off, then she was on again, and now she was not renewed this time. She did apply, I understand, to be back on the board again, and trying to figure out what the reason might be for that. One of the reasons that we're concerned is that there used to be two Native American women on this board 2 years ago, and now there are none. There are also no Latinos on the board, and there haven't been for the last 3 years. And of the possible reasons that were given, among them that Ms. Red Thunder has missed meetings. I know Mr. Miggins, the chair, has missed a few of the subcommittee meetings, which then for those of us in the public who come downtown to go to those meetings and then they get canceled, can become a problem. So it's probably not attendance. Is it that she's not neutral enough? Well, one of the members of the review board has voted every single time to support the police point of view, so it's probably not the neutrality issue. I guess I'll just have to wrap up. You have a chance to help make this window into the police bureau a little bit more open. A lot of times it feels like the staff and the CRC are standing in the shutters of that window and the public can't see in. So when the consultant's report comes out this January, I hope you'll help make this a more open process.
Dan, I had a question for you. I thought I heard you say that you were concerned about the CRC moving towards mediation.
Yes.
And yet everything that I've read in terms of surveys of both citizens who've complained as well as police officers, that seems to get the highest amount of positive reactions. What's your problem with that?
It's not a problem with the mediation program. In fact, we are part of the reason that Portland has a mediation program. We appreciate the mediation program. I think the Citizen Review Committee has a different function. They hear appeals of misconduct complaints after an investigation's already happened. So when people file their complaints, they have two basically routes that they can take. One is to go to mediation, which is great. You know, sit down, talk to the officer person to person. We, as a peace group, we think that's great. But then the other option is to have an investigation done and have an outcome for that investigation. And if the citizen's not happy with that outcome, they get to file an appeal. And so the review committee is supposed to be hearing the sides, you know, the different sides of that investigation and deciding whether the Bureau did a good job and whether the outcome was appropriate. And I think in that case, then the mediation, that you've already skipped out the possibility of mediation. So there you need people who can sort of dig in and sort of decide what happened and whether there should be a sustained finding and that kind of thing.
Okay, thank you. Teresa?
Good morning, Mayor and Commissioners. Teresa Teeter, downtown citizen advocate. I'm going to kind of come at this from a different perspective, pretty close to Dan's. I've sat in on quite a few of the review committee sessions, different venue parts of it, and I'm seeing the education part of the members, even though they have these diverse backgrounds, the actual hands-on to see how these people that are coming in front of them, their situation of what happened between them and the officer out on the streets, to actually put themselves in the situation. I'm suggesting you have these new committee members get on the MAX line on a late Saturday night and observe police officers with the gentleman running people off the MAX platforms that don't have proper honored citizen tickets, because they didn't understand the honored citizen ticket process during one of the meetings. I'm suggesting you get them down into Chinatown and watch how the drug handling and the bus and all things go, but not necessarily be there visually. Be like the cops undercover so the cops don't know they're being watched, so they can get the perspective from both sides. And so when they're in these meetings with their backgrounds that they bring to the table, they can see what's going on in this town. Because what they've learned in college and what you see in experience on the street, you know, don't mesh. But you know what you understand what I'm saying. What you have helps you understand. But you can't understand if you're only bringing half to the table of the ability to understand, if you don't really see the picture as the picture has happened in the community. And I've seen this over and over. I've begged people to come and take their things to IPR. They feel IPR is part of the police station. They don't believe it's going to be fair and impartial and that they're really going to be heard. I've tried over and over. We have a listening sessions coming up on December 6th from the outside auditor to listen to these stories. And I don't know if anybody's even going to come. So I just want to let you know my concerns on some of these issues. Thank you.
Thanks, folks.
That's all who signed up.
Auditor, would you care to respond?
Yeah, just a little clarification. I intended to say it earlier when I was up here that the process for selection involves a committee that reviews the written applications, and then they pare it down to another committee that will do the interviews. And the committees are made up of members of the community, past or present CRC members, and one member of the IPR. So it's really the majority of the votes in all those cases are by far the members of the community who make the decisions on who the applicants will be. And we look at all those applicants that come in each year and rank them and choose the very best. And in some cases, CRC members have reapplied and not been chosen. In other cases, they have. And it's really very much driven by these two committees that are majority of citizens. In terms of training of CRC members, they all go through the Citizens Academy, so they get education about police practices, but they also go on ride-alongs with police officers. We have speakers that come and talk to them about issues such as representatives of the ACLU or the Northwest Constitutional Rights Center. So we do make a strong effort to make sure that the CRC members are educated and exposed to all the variety of issues that they would be having to make considerations on. Thank you.
Let's call a vote.
Leonard?
Well, recently Mayor Potter asked me to do a ride-along with a specific police officer, and believe it or not, it was the first time I ever did a ride-along in my entire career, including public safety, with the police officer. I'd worked on the street with them quite a bit, but never actually sat in a vehicle and talked as they did their job. And I spent the entire 10-hour shift with that officer. East Precinct heard that I had done that, asked me to do the same thing. I did that about 3 weeks ago. And of course, when you're riding along with the police officer, they arrest people and they take them to jail. The folks at the jail saw I was with the officers, asked me to do a, you call it a ride-along, what you call that when you go to the jail and spend the evening with them. But I'm going there tonight at 3 till whenever their shift is over. So the points about observing what the police do are really good ones, because I really thought I understood, given my background, better than most what police did, and I realized I really didn't. It was really it wasn't just important for me to do my job. It also, just on a human level, made me understand better what I thought I already understood, and I really didn't appreciate some of the issues that they deal with. But when I had the opportunity to appoint a member, I appointed Lauren Erickson, who's here in the crowd. And as you heard, Lauren Erickson was a 25-year firefighter. My last 5 years in the fire bureau, Lauren Erickson was assigned to my crew. I was his lieutenant. I appointed him because I had personal experience that he was very comfortable challenging authority, and did so on a quite regular basis. and was very good at it. And so I would say to Dan and others who are concerned about people who have public safety backgrounds, sometimes the harshest critics of people in those professions are their colleagues, as long as you're picking the right people, because they understand the nuances and some of the actual dynamics that occur day to day, and they don't necessarily buy some of the stories they hear back. And I know that that's borne true with Lawrence Service, who has been an outstanding member by all accounts on the CRC. And I would finally say that I just had my five-year anniversary here last Sunday, and in that 5 years, I've worked with Gary Blackmer a lot. Sometimes I've been on his good side, and sometimes I've been on his bad side. But I've found that when I'm on his bad side, it's because I haven't crossed all my T's and dotted all my I's. And what I've learned about him is that he is exceedingly principled and exceedingly fair in applying those principles. He will apply the same rigorous, tough set of principles to his enemies as he does to his friends. And because of that, I have just an innate sense that the CRC works well. I don't believe Gary would allow a system to operate that didn't fairly handle citizen complaints, that didn't fairly screen out maybe complaints that were based in something other than truly concerns on the part of a police officer. And there are a lot of those that come through, too, and you have to have a filter system to know who's trying to use the system to even a score and who's using the system because they actually were dealt with unfairly. And to be honest, I think we have to acknowledge that that happens. That's all my way of saying it's a really tough job you guys have. And I understand better today after following up on Mayor Potter's request of me than I did a year ago. And I heard stories right around with the officers that literally made my head spin. I thought, wow, that's some very, very unique challenges. You guys have to sort all that stuff out and then find the truth and do the right thing. I don't envy your job. I mean, it's a very tough job. So I appreciate it. I appreciate the caliber of the appointees. I appreciate the caliber of the staff that's assigned to it. And I have a better appreciation than I used to of the police bureau and its challenges. And I hope to even be better at it as my career goes on. So thank you all for serving, and I'm pleased to support you. Aye.
Stan.
Hi. Well, I also want to thank you for serving both the, well, maybe even more the returning members, because you're going to keep going, and welcome the new members. I also think Auditor Blackmer has done a really good job. This is a very, and the staff and team, this is a very tough piece of work, and I wish we had 15 cities in this country that were doing oversight of the police better than us so we could copy them, and unfortunately we don't. This is a topic that has been extraordinarily difficult in this entire country, and so I think we do have some things to work on, and I think Dan Handelman is very good at keeping our feet to the fire and pushing on issues, and I think he's got some clean points. Quite a few years ago when we instituted this system to replace PIAC, which I think most people have forgotten by now, most blissfully on many of our part, the question was, do you go to a fully independent review with the ability to essentially do things independent of the police, or do you work in this function with oversight but also with cooperation, having the police do the investigations? And I after a lot of soul searching and against the recommendation of a pretty good committee, supported this approach. And the reason is I think that over the course of a longer period of time, the primary strategy is to change the culture between the citizens and the police to one of working together. And I'm not pointing fingers at anyone, but to say that hasn't always been the case, and that the vast majority of the complaints involve things that were avoidable. And they may or may not have violated police procedure, which is ultimately what a yes or no answer decides. And if you're just investigating an organization whose job then is to close ranks in their mind, you very rarely get to how could this have been avoided. And often what I've found is that the primary question is, why did this happen, as opposed to does somebody frankly get a very probably not meaningful mark on their record or not. That's a whole bunch of them. And so I think the mediation approach matters. I think working in concert with the police matters. And then there are a small number of cases that are very, very serious and need the citizens to come in and take a hard line. And I think you're capable of that. And I think when those serious complaints come along, and I don't mean to say the smaller things aren't serious. They're very serious to people, but they probably are not about ultimately serious consequences. They're about what happened out there on the street. But there are a small number of cases that are very critical, and I think we have a team that is able to take those on, and hopefully will, still working towards the larger cultural change that I think the chief, the police bureau, I know the mayor, and Auditor Blackmer are after. So this is, I think, if not the toughest, it's among the toughest volunteer assignments. So I admire you for wanting to do it. I would not, and thank you. Aye.
Potter.
Well, I want to thank the citizens who serve on this review commission. It's extremely important. At the heart of any democracy is that that power is not unfettered on the part of government, and that there must be controls in place that ensure that that particular people who carry firearms are doing so in the best interest of the community and with respect for the community and working with the community. So often, as it ends up on the street, is it's two individuals, a police officer and a citizen. There's something that happens and that the citizen is dissatisfied. And one of the more promising avenues that I've seen in how this gets resolved is in mediation, is that when I read the internal audits of how the media, how the people who are complaining feel and how police officers feel, is that both parties have a much higher degree of satisfaction with that particular process than any other process used to investigate police complaints. And so I hope in the future that we can expand on those kind of programs, because I believe that ultimately, for the police to be successful, they have to have the trust of the community. They have to be able to understand and relate to the community. And in fact, they have to look like the community. And in order to do those things, there has to be a clear understanding that police officers work for the community, and that their job is to ensure that our communities are safe and well taken care of. So this function is so important to ensure all those things happen. And I talked to the auditor as this program was being put together a number of years ago. And we talked about the importance of not just overseeing the police, but using it as a tool, as Commissioner Stanton indicated, to begin to change some of the cultural norms of the police, and to ensure that community policing was part of that process, so that it's understood that in order to be effective, police officers have to have a partnership and relationship with the community that's based on mutual trust and respect. And you folks on the committee are a very important element of all of that, and I want to express to you my sincere appreciation for what you do for our community and for our police bureau. So thank you. I vote aye. Please read the 10:15 time, sir.
Item 14.01, accept the report, Venture Capital Fund Review.
Thanks for being here, folks.
Thank you, Mayor Potter and commissioners. So my name is Kimberly Schneider. I'm a senior policy director in Commissioner Adams' office, who is out sick, as you know. So in April of this year, you passed unanimously the reform to the business licensing fee, which has produced substantial relief to 13,000 small businesses. During that hearing, this council, though, raised significant concerns about the tax treatment of venture capital funds. Today, the Revenue Bureau will present a report answering these important questions, and you will be asked to vote to accept the Venture Capital Fund Review report. This report marks another step in the tax reform process to address inequities in the BLF. This reform is intended to foster a strong, sustainable Portland economy, one that supports small businesses and the family wage jobs they create. During testimony presented at the BLF reform, you heard about the tax treatment that disadvantages venture capital funds. In short, venture capital funds in this city are taxed differently from mutual funds. As a result of this treatment, venture capital funds have a hard time staying in the city and county. In response to your request to reconsider this issue during the hearing, our office worked with the Revenue Bureau to create and convene a working group. The group was comprised of members from the venture capital industry, tax experts, and representatives from the City of Portland and Multnomah County. The group jointly designed a solution that would overcome the venture capital fund's disadvantage without creating unintended consequences for the Revenue Bureau or other businesses. The work group determined that it was appropriate to treat venture capital mutual funds and all diversified investment funds alike under the business licensing fee and business income tax. The reform does not create a more favorable tax treatment for any particular type of fund or business. As a result of this administrative rule change, we believe Portland and Multnomah will be put on equal footing with the surrounding jurisdictions in terms of our ability to attract venture capital. Once the report is accepted, with input from the working group, Commissioner Adams' office will work with PDC to benchmark and determine Portland's ability to attract and retain venture capital funds and investment in local businesses. So on behalf of Commissioner Adams, we would like to acknowledge and to thank all of those who have been involved in this process for their hard work and collaborative efforts, especially those in the working group. Bill Newman, Robert McNee, Steve Christensen, Neil Kimmelfeld, Todd Gregory, Martin Medeiros, Hugh McEnworth, Bob Ward, Rick Hawkins, excuse me, and Gordon Hoffman. We'd also like to thank Shane Abna from the City Attorney's Office, Brendan Finn and Colin Sears from Commissioner Saltzman and PDC. Commissioner Adams would also like to thank his colleagues on City Council for their support, and Multnomah County Commissioner Jeff Kogan and Warren Fish from his office for their collaboration in the work group and on this effort. Finally, we'd like to especially thank Terry Williams and Scott Carter and Sue of the Revenue Bureau for their diligence and hard work. And Terry Williams will be introducing and summarizing the report.
Good morning, Mayor and Commissioners. I'm Terry Williams, License and Tax Division Manager for the Revenue Bureau. This area of taxation is complex, and so I'm going to do my very best to not get into the technical aspects and try to explain it very high level and simply. And if
I should tell you, we have discussed it
okay.
before, so I think we understand what the issue is. So.
Okay.
And Sam's not here, so.
So do I stop now then? Or?
I think that's the suggestion.
Okay. Then I hope that you'll pass this.
As of right now, you have the votes.
Okay. Thank you.
So then can we have a few people who are here to testify.
Okay.
Should we go ahead with that?
Please.
Okay. So we'd like to call Colin Sears, Bob Ward, and Martin Medeiros.
Thanks for being here today, folks. When you speak, please state your name for the record.
Okay. I'll start off, and I'll try to abbreviate my remarks. Thank you, Mayor and Commissioners, for hearing this ruling today. I'm here on behalf of Aaron Flynn, our Director of Economic Development, who had a conflict, and I'm an Economic Development Manager at the Portland Development Commission, and I've worked at PDC 8 years in economic development. So I think this is a watershed moment around venture capital, just to start off. This ruling today will really make Portland more competitive economically, not only leveling the playing field to make Portland more attractive for venture capital firms, but it will have a significant impact in retaining technologies and businesses that in the past have left our city for the suburbs, and more significantly gone to Seattle, San Francisco, and other cities with stronger venture communities. The ruling will also have a positive impact on Portland's target industry clusters, most specifically for technology coming out of our universities, as well as emerging small companies that take this technology and turn it into products. Additionally, it will contribute to growth of family wage jobs in our target industry sectors, which are manufacturing, high-tech, sustainable industries, medical technology, as well as creative services firms that provide services to those companies. So the bottom line is this is a wonderful thing. PDC economic development staff will be able to not only promote our region as a place with a top-tier workforce and moderate living costs in comparison to our West Coast urban neighbors, but also as having a favorable venture capital climate. We'll be working with Commissioner Adams' office to develop benchmarking measures and track this as an ongoing to see how successful this is. And this aligns well with the economic development strategy work that Aaron Flynn will be leading next year as part of the Portland plan. So thank you very much. On behalf of PDC, I would like to read a brief letter, a summary of a letter from Bill Newman and Gordon Hoffman, who are the managing directors of Northwest Technology Ventures, a firm that was instrumental in working with the work group to on this ruling. Both of them had prior commitments and were not able to make it today. So I'm just going to summarize this, a few key points. But they want to express their efforts to the mayor and commissioners on the efforts that have gone into this taxation issue. They feel that they were very impressed working with the mayor and the commissioners. They feel this is a collaborative public-private process that was extremely fruitful, and they're very satisfied with the results. They appreciate your efforts on the behalf of the business and the venture capital community here in Portland and the region. I've handed the letter to be passed around, to be distributed. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Good morning. I'm Bob Ward with Capybara Ventures. We're a local seed stage venture fund and actually right now the only venture capital fund headquartered in Portland. And so I'm very pleased to be here representing the venture capital community. With that, I'll keep my comments brief per Commissioner Leonard's comments. Quit while you're ahead.
Don't misunderstand. I just think we understand the issue, but say whatever you need to say.
Very good. Well, I just want to encourage the City Council to support this rule change. I was very heartened and encouraged by the work by the working group and the inclusiveness and their willingness to reach out to the community to come up with a solution that I think was satisfactory to everybody. So I think that this rule change basically is satisfying our needs, and we will be very comfortable staying in Portland with the approval of the rule change. Not only that, I'm aware of at least one VC that will plan on relocating back to Portland based on this, and possibly a second. So with that, I just want to thank all the people that have put in hard work, Kimberly of Sam Adams' office, Terry Williams, Jeff Kogan at the county level, and Warren Fish. So thank you very much, and once again, I encourage you to pass this rule change.
Thank you.
Thank you, Commissioners, Mayor. My name is Mark Medeiros, and I am a partner at the law firm of Sweeter Medeiros Haver. We're a law firm that helps people in the business of the creative, innovative classes. I participated in the work group, and I'm here today to support this rule change. I look forward to the day when per capita income inside the city is well above the national average, when unemployment is well below the national average, when citizens have sufficient savings for retirement, healthcare, and where the value of innovation and creativity that springs from the diligent efforts of our citizens stays in the city. Right now, I cannot say any of these things are true. But today, in this chamber, the future can look much brighter. Today is a new day. Today, we have the tremendous opportunity to remove a huge negative for the city. It is the unintended policy of financial self-destruction. In effect, we have favored out-of-state investment to our local innovators over local dollars. The unintended consequences are that those penalized local dollars have left the city. Portland, in many respects, has become an innovation and creativity colony. Interests outside the city and state enjoy the spoils of our intellectual labor as we tax, criticize, and chase these small businesses away. Witness the ring just outside Multnomah County. Witness the patents that are prosecuted and invented right here in the city. But immediately after the United States Patent and Trademark Office grants the patent to a Portland citizen, that is assigned right away outside the city and outside the state in a headquarters, generally where the investors are, generally where the headquarters of that business are. So we are providing a huge amount of innovation in the areas of sustainable technologies, healthcare, and the fashion industry, to name a few. Today, that's going to change with your support. Contrary to popular belief, venture capitalists, or VCs, are not independently wealthy. But financially, they carry the risk that it's basically years of their labor without constant compensation. This is the carried interest. This is kind of like the target of the tax. This tax in Portland is like no other jurisdiction. It's certainly not how federal treatment of this tax is done. The decision today is simple because everybody wins. The city's revenue picture will not change, and it is not collecting these tax dollars as a target of this unintended tax have left. VCs are not the only ones who will suffer about the hundreds of employees their investments employ and the services consumed by those employees, those who patronize restaurants and other services of the cities. But after today, we can eliminate this huge negative and begin to bring jobs back and small businesses back and investment back to Portland. This process, which took the better part of a year, is a huge victory for the city and our children. I would like right now to thank the leadership of Sue Kubler-Ants and her team at the Revenue Bureau, the Office of Sam Adams, and the supportive comments of Eric last year at the Business Income Tax thing that triggered a lot of this. It was a huge effort, a lot of people involved, good public-private partnership, and I look forward to the day when people come to Portland to spend their money on the technologies, on the future that will provide family wage jobs and the sophisticated type of innovation that we can retain here that we deserve to reap the benefits of. And your support today on this rule will do that. Thank you very much for your time. I'll leave a copy of my comments with the clerk.
Thank you. Thank you all for being here and testifying. Do we have a sign-up sheet?
I did. No one else signed up.
Is there anyone here who wishes to address this issue? This is a report. I need a motion to accept.
Second.
Please call the vote.
Leonard?
What we learned in the discussion of the reform of the business license fee here some time back was that where mutual funds existed in the city, they were not required to pay the BLF. But rather it was the responsibility of individual mutual fund owners to pay any tax owed. We discovered that the venture capital funds were not treated that way, that they had to pay, the fund itself had to pay versus having the responsibility to be on the owners. That clearly is what I consider to be a technical oversight, different treatment of different kinds of funds, but for a technical difference that caused an incentive for those managers of those funds to move outside the city. That's not something we want to see happen. I mean, we want to make sure our tax system is fair and people pay their fair share. We also don't want to create undue burdens on a particular sector of any industry that creates incentives for them to move from the city, thereby taking jobs and other taxes that they pay. So I do appreciate this work. It's balanced. It's, I think, going to allow us to keep those venture capital funds that are in the city here and create incentives for those that aren't to move into the city, because obviously there are a lot of benefits of these kinds of funds being located in a commerce center such as Portland. So I appreciate the work on this, appreciate the the thought behind it, and I'm pleased to support it. Aye.
Stan.
Well, I agree, and I want to thank our team at Licenses and Commissioner Adams' office for figuring all this out. I mean, it's one of these things where we, I think, created these fees in a era where venture capital didn't really exist in the way that it does now, and so it certainly wasn't anybody's plan to have an unfair tax. The negative effect is overwhelming, and this is much like some of the urban rural strategies where you haven't lost anything if you lower a fee on something you're not going to get. And by getting these funds situated back in the city, there's all kinds of spinoff benefit. And it's also, I think, it's not actually an exemption. If you look at what we're actually taxing, we shouldn't be taxing this particular version. This isn't business income in the sense of what the tax is intended to catch. And so Commissioner Adams did a really good job. We actually rejected it the first time, not on this issue, but on others, of working for many years to reform our business income tax structure, and find the balance between bringing in money that we need for the services and having a structure that I think can promote economic development. And so it's also, it's always a pleasure, too, to be on the same page with the Portland Development Commission's Economic Development Department, and we're going to go out together and make something of this change. So thanks to everybody. Aye.
Potter.
Well, this is, I think, one of those win-wins for our community and certainly the venture capital community. Perhaps the only folks that may not be happy are some of our surrounding jurisdictions, as some of the venture capitalists come back into Portland and set up business here. This is no additional cost to the city, but has tremendous potential benefit to the community. So appreciate everybody that worked on it. I vote aye. Please read item 14. We're going to move to the regular agenda, item 1410.
Amend code to reflect current structure and operations in the Office of Management and Finance.
This item was inadvertently placed on the council calendar. It's actually scheduled for December 12th at 9:30 a.m. Please read item 1411.
Authorize changes to the Human Resources Administrative Rules and to the definition of classifications exempt from the classified service to implement charter reform approved by the voters on May 15, 2007.
Good morning, folks.
Good morning. Good morning, Mayor. For the record, my name is Yvonne Deckard. I'm the director for the Bureau of Human Resources. Last May, the voters changed via the charter, via the election Title IV or Chapter IV of the Civil Service rules. And after that, shortly after that, the Mayor, you requested that BHR look at its administrative rules and look at the changes that were voted in and make appropriate changes to our administrative rules and to our processes. We've had an opportunity to do that. We're here to cover our recommendations to you today. Now, we've had an opportunity to meet with you individually through Anna, and so if you feel like you have enough information. No.
I'm pleased with your recommendation.
Okay, so here we go. So we'll cover everything. But Anna is going to cover our recommendations to the council today. Now, also just...
Please that you don't have laborers in the exempt group.
Oh, okay, right. we did, in addition to covering these proposed changes with the Bureau of Directors, we also, in September, sent them out to all of our labor organizations so that they would have an opportunity to have discussion with us on the proposed changes. And with the exception of a quick conversation with Robert King for PPA and James Sester for DCTU, none of the other organizations showed much interest at this time. So,
all right, Mayor, Commissioners, Anna Ken, the Bureau of Human Resources. As Yvonne stated, what's before you today is our recommendations for changes to the HR administrative rules and the definition of positions exempt from the classified service, exempt from civil service. To implement changes that the voters approved last May. In terms of, there's really three categories of change. One is, as I said, the definition of classifications exempt from civil service, elimination of definitions and restrictions on seasonal and temporary employment, and elimination of rules governing appointments and promotions in the charter. As you know, the changes by the voters condensed Chapter 4 from over 7 pages to 2 pages. That streamlining is very much appreciated by the Bureau of Human Resources. The Appendix A, page 1 of that is the list of the current classifications that are exempt under the charter language, which is in essence elected officials and their staff, city attorneys, and bureau directors hired after December of 2000. The second page of that exhibit is our recommendation based on the definition in the charter. As approved by voters, employees and classifications that have a major role in the formulation of policy that requires the exercise of independent judgment can be excluded from civil service. We further refined that to employees and classifications where a critical element of the job is the formulation of policy with citywide impact. We think that was true to the definition that the voters put in the charter, and by citywide impact, we mean either broad-based policy that impacts the city as a whole as an employer or the city as a political entity. The list of the classifications, there are 22 classifications, 38 incumbents, but this change would not affect an employee who was has been permanently appointed to one of these classifications prior to January 1st of 2008. Those employees will retain civil service status until they leave city employment. Second broad area of change, as I mentioned, was the elimination of fairly detailed rules governing temporary and seasonal employment. The HR administrative rules contain significant restrictions on temporary and seasonal hires. We're not proposing on making any changes with one exception. The charter language had limited seasonal employment to a period not to exceed 5 months. And as I understand it, a circuit court decision about 25 years ago defined that as 860 hours. I don't know why, because if I do the math, it's 800 hours, but it was 860 hours, and that was in the administrative rule. What we're proposing is to increase that to 1,200 hours, so there would still be a limit on seasonal employees, but that limit would be increased to that amount. We have put that information on the table because we're currently in negotiations with our seasonal maintenance workers, and so they are aware of this proposed change. And we do have a duty to bargain the impact of that change with that bargaining group should it be approved by council. Last area is the rules governing appointments and promotions. The one significant area of change here was that the charter had contained specific language that where we were hiring, if we were using a ranked list to select qualified candidates, the hiring bureau was limited to only considering the top 5 names on that list when they had a single vacancy. Again, that language, rule of 5, we've referred to it as, was incorporated into the HR administrative rule. Now that that's been eliminated from the charter, we're proposing eliminating it from the HR administrative rule as well and substituting language that if a hiring bureau elects to use a ranked list, because they don't have to do that, they use unranked and equally ranked lists as well, but if they elect to use a ranked list, that the we work with them on the selection criteria of how we take candidates off that list, but it's no longer has to be the rule of 5. We're only taking the top 5 candidates. That covers the changes that we've recommended. The significant, we've also obviously changed in the administrative rules the appeal period for filing appeals to the Civil Service Board, again, just to match what the voters put in, which was 21 days. It's now a uniform period, which is nice because there was a different appeal period for appeals from examinations, classifications, and discipline. Now we have one period of time. So, questions?
Thank you, folks. Is there a sign-up sheet for testimony?
There was. No one signed up.
Is there anyone here who wishes to testify to this matter? This is a non-emergency and moves to a second reading. Can you read item 1412?
Mm-hmm. Modify the professional, technical, and expert policy documents to address minority, women, and emerging small business subcontractor concerns and to require public notice notice of the city's intent to execute sole source PTE contracts.
Commissioner Salzman, who's unable to be here today, asked that this be set over to next week. Are there any objections? Okay. It's been set over. It'll be heard next week. Please read item 1413.
Extend procurement card contract with Bank of America for 1 year.
So second reading, call a vote.
Leonard?
Aye.
Sten?
Aye.
Potter?
Aye. Please read item 1414.
Extend moratorium on development within commercial and industrial zones on Hayden Island.
Second reading, call a vote.
Leonard?
Aye.
Sten?
Aye.
Potter?
Aye. Please read item 1415.
Authorize intergovernmental agreement with the Washington State Department of Transportation for the Columbia River Crossing Project.
Is there staff here from the commissioner's office?
Yes, sir.
Please come forward.
We have an agreement with the Washington Department of Transportation, which would be 1 year and would compensate staff for their time in the environmental impact study.
Could you state your name for the record?
I'm sorry, Paul Smith from the Office of Transportation. We had a similar intergovernmental agreement for approximately a year, and that expired in September 30th. And so this is an agreement to carry us forward until September 30th of next year. The money is our federal funds, and we're providing 30% match.
Questions? Is there anyone signed up to testify on this matter?
I did not have a sign-up sheet for this.
Is there anyone here who wishes to testify to this matter?
Good morning. I'm Amanda Fritz, speaking only for myself. I served on the Portland Planning Commission from 1996 to 2003. One of the projects reviewed in the towards the end of that period was the preliminary report on this Columbia River Crossing Bridge. The Planning Commission sent a recommendation to Council, which I presented here, urging the Council to review the proposal in relation to Portland's needs, the regional context, and land use employment policies both in North Portland and Clark County. I don't know if that review ever happened, so I have questions, which I know you can't answer with Commissioner Adams absent. But they include, how does this proposed bridge relate to other regional transportation needs? Do we really support allocating $4.2 billion in federal, state, regional, and local money to this project over the transportation needs in Portland? How confident are we of the $4.2 billion estimate? Are there other more cost-effective alternatives? What about regular rail rather than light rail? Why require the local traffic to use an interstate highway rather than providing an arterial bridge connecting Portland and Vancouver? How are six lanes each way on the bridge supposed to funnel into three lanes on either side without causing accidents and congestion? In approving this bridge, is Portland saying that we're willing to destroy homes and businesses in North, Northeast, and Southwest Portland to expand the lanes throughout the city later on? Did you know that any one of six jurisdictions can veto this project? When this project was considered at the Planning Commission when I was on it, the projected cost was $2 billion. It's now 4.2. 5 years later. This decision-making process feels a little like the tram to me. It's not clear who's making the decisions. It's not clear whether Portland citizens support the proposal as presented. So I have two final questions. Have you asked the Planning Commission to hold hearings and comment on this proposal? And how much further down this process are we going to go before holding a hearing at Council to vote on it? This morning's item puts only $83,000 in staff time towards the project. It's already cost millions in planning. I want Portland to make a reasoned decision on this I-5 bridge before too much money, more money, has been spent and it becomes a done deal. So I would just like to know what the process is from now on.
I'm not sure if Commissioner Adams is not here.
Right.
And this is an emergency vote, and we can't vote today.
I'm not asking you to do anything with this particular vote. I just took advantage of it being on the agenda to say that it feels to me like there needs to be more local public process to decide whether this really is our priority for spending all this money.
Thank you. This will be set over and voted on tomorrow as it's an emergency vote. We don't have the votes to do it today. Please read item 1416.
Authorize an intergovernmental agreement with the Tri-County Metropolitan Transportation District to provide for enhanced security and cleaning during construction of light rail facilities on 5th and 6th Avenues for calendar year 2008.
This is also Commissioner Adams. Is there anybody here from staff to discuss this issue? Is there anyone who's signed up to testify on this matter?
I did not have a sign-up sheet.
Okay, with the approval of the rest of the members of council, we'll set this over.
Well, I think it's just a first reading anyway.
Yes.
So
it would just, it may be an automatic vote next time, I think. So.
Okay.
So we'll have this set over.
Continue it or second reading?
Continue it.
Continue.
We could have the testimony at the second reading. There's no reason we can't have the second. I mean, if we don't like what we hear, we don't have to vote for it.
Okay, that's fine with me.
Second.
And with testimony, if there's people here to testify on it.
Okay.
Hey, read item 1417.
Authorize a major encroachment to B-Side 6 LLC to install, use, and maintain building improvements in the airspace over a portion of the East Burnside Street right-of-way at the southwest corner of Southeast 6th Avenue and East Burnside Street.
It's a second reading. Call a vote.
Leonard?
Aye.
Sten?
Aye.
Potter?
Aye.
Please read item 1418.
Authorized lease agreement with B-Side 6 LLC in the amount of $1 per year to construct, use, and maintain building improvements in the airspace over a portion of the East Burnside Street right-of-way.
Second reading, call a vote.
Leonard?
Aye.
Sten?
Aye.
Potter?
Aye.
Item 1419.
Extend security services contract with Pioneer Courthouse Square, Inc. and authorize payment of associated fees.
This is an emergency ordinance, and it will be set over till tomorrow. Please read item 1420.
Assess property for sidewalk repair by the Bureau of Maintenance.
Hi.
Good morning.
I'm Sharon Simran. I represent the auditor's office, and this ordinance is to assess property for sidewalk repair ordered by the Bureau of Maintenance.
Is there anyone signed up to testify on this matter?
No one signed up.
Any other questions, commissioners? It's a non-emergency and moves to a second reading. Thank you.
Thank you.
Recessed until 2 p.m. Thursday. Right.